File 2. When the stream is most boisterous, and its fury heightened by a storm, it is dangerous to come within a Norway mile of it. Boats, yachts, and ships have been carried away by not guarding against it before they were within its reach. It likewise happens frequently that whales come too near the stream and are overpowered by its violence. And then it is impossible to describe their howlings and bellowings in their fruitless struggles to disengage themselves. A bear, once attempting to swim from Lofoten to Moscow, was caught by the stream and borne down while he roared terribly, so as to be heard on shore. Large stocks of firs and pine trees, after being absorbed by the current, rise again broken and torn to such a degree as if bristles grew upon them. This plainly shows the bottom to consist of craggy rocks, among which they are whirled to and fro. This stream is regulated by the flux and reflux of the sea, it being constantly high and low water every 6 hours. In the year 1645, early in the morning of Sexagesima Sunday, it raged with such noise and impetuosity that the very stones of the houses on the coast fell to the ground. In regard to the depth of the water, I could not see how this could have been ascertained at all in the immediate vicinity of the vortex. The 40 fathoms must have reference only to portions of the channel close upon the shore, either of Moscow or Lofoten. The depth in the centre of the Moscow Strom must be immeasurably greater, and no better proof of this fact is necessary than can be obtained from even the sidelong glance into the abyss of the whirl which may be had from the highest crag of Helseggen. Looking down from this pinnacle upon the howling phlegethon below, I could not help smiling at the simplicity with which the honest Jonas Ramus records, as a matter difficult of belief, the anecdotes of the whales and the bears. For it appeared to me, in fact, a self-evident thing that the largest ships of the line in existence, coming within the influence of that deadly attraction, could resist it as little as a feather the hurricane, and must disappear bodily and at once. The attempts to account for the phenomenon, some of which I remember, seemed to me sufficiently plausible in perusal, now wore a very different and unsatisfactory aspect. The idea generally received is that this, as well as 3 smaller vortices amongst the Faroe Islands, have no other cause than the collision of waves rising and falling, at flux and reflux, against a ridge of rocks and shells, which confines the water so that it precipitates itself like a cataract. And thus, the higher the flood rises, the deeper must the fall be. And the natural result of all is a whirlpool or vortex, the prodigious suction of which is sufficiently known by lesser experiments. These are the words of the Encyclopaedia Britannica. Kircher and others imagine that in the centre of the channel of the maelstrom is an abyss penetrating the globe and issuing in some very remote part, the Gulf of Bothnia being somewhat decidedly named in one instance. This opinion, idle in itself, was the one to which, as I gazed, my imagination most readily assented. And mentioning it to the guide, I was rather surprised to hear him say that, although it was the view almost universally entertained of the subject by the Norwegians, it nevertheless was not his own. As to the former notion, he confessed his inability to comprehend it, and here I agreed with him, for, however conclusive on paper, it becomes altogether unintelligible and even absurd amid the thunder of the abyss.
"You've had a good look at the world now," said the old man, "and if you will creep round this crag so as to get in its lee and deaden the roar of the water, I will tell you a story that will convince you I ought to know something of the Moskoe throne."
I placed myself as desired, and he proceeded.
"Myself and my two brothers once owned a schooner-rigged smack of about 70 tons burden, with which we were in the habit of fishing among the islands beyond Moskoe, nearly to Vur. In all violent eddies at sea there is good fishing, at proper opportunities, if one only has the courage to attempt it. But among the whole of the Lofoden coastmen, we three were the only ones who made a regular business of going out to the islands, as I tell you. The usual grounds are a great way lower down to the southward. The fish can be got at all hours without much risk, and therefore these places are preferred. The choice spots over here among the rocks, however, not only yield the finest variety, but in far greater abundance, so that we often got in a single day what the more timid of the craft could not scrape together in a week. In fact, we made it a matter of desperate speculation, the risk of life standing instead of labor, and courage answering for capital. We kept the smack in a cove about 5 miles higher up the coast than this, and it was our practice in fine weather to take advantage of the 15-minute slack to push across the main channel of the Moskoe Strom far above the pool, and then drop down upon anchorage somewhere near Otterholm or Sandflesen, where the eddies are not so violent as elsewhere. Here we used to remain until nearly time for slack water again, when we weighed and made for home. We never set out upon this expedition without a steady side wind for going and coming, one that we felt sure would not fail us before our return, and we seldom made a miscalculation upon this point. Twice during 6 years, we were forced to stay all night at anchor on account of a dead calm, which is a rare thing indeed just about here. And once we had to remain on the grounds nearly a week, starving to death, owing to a gale which blew up shortly after our arrival and made the channel too boisterous to be thought of. Upon this occasion, we should have been driven out to sea in spite of everything, for the whirlpool threw us round and round so violently that at length we fouled our anchor and dragged it. If it had not been that we drifted into one of the innumerable cross-currents, here today and gone tomorrow, which drove us under the lee of Fleeman, whereby good luck we brought up. I could not tell you the 20th part of the difficulties we encountered on the ground. Oh, it's a bad spot to be in, even in good weather. But we made shift always to run the gauntlet of the Moskoe Strom itself without accident, although at times my heart has been in my mouth when we happened to be a minute or so behind or before the slack. The wind sometimes was not as strong as we thought it at starting, and then we made rather less way than we could wish, while the current rendered the smack unmanageable. My eldest brother had a son, 18 years old, and I had two stout boys of my own. These would have been of great assistance at such times in using the sweeps, as well as afterwards in fishing. But somehow, although we ran the risk ourselves, we had not the heart to let the young ones get into danger. For after all is said and done, it was a horrible danger, and that's the truth. It is now within a few days of 3 years since what I am going to tell you occurred. It was on the 10th of July, a day which the people of this part of the world will never forget, for it was one in which blew the most terrible hurricane that ever came out of the heavens. And yet, all the morning, and indeed until late in the afternoon, there was a gentle and steady breeze from the southwest, while the sun shone brightly, so that the oldest seaman amongst us could not have foreseen what was to follow. The three of us, my two brothers and myself, had crossed over to the islands at about 2 o'clock, and soon nearly loaded the snack with fine fish, which we all remarked were more plenty that day than we had ever known them. It was just 7 by my watch when we weighed and started for home, so as to make the worst of the storm at slack water, which we knew would be at 8. We set out with a fresh wind on our starboard quarter, and for some time spanked along at a great rate, never dreaming of danger, for indeed we saw not the slightest reason to apprehend it. All at once we were taken aback by a breeze from over Helseggen. Now this was most unusual, something that had never happened to us before, and I began to feel a little uneasy, without exactly knowing why. We put the boat on the wind, but could make no headway at all for the eddies, and I was on the point of proposing to return to the anchorage, when looking astern, we saw the whole horizon covered with a singular copper-coloured cloud that rose with the most amazing velocity. In the meantime, the breeze that had headed us off fell away, and we were dead becalmed, drifting about in every direction. This state of things, however, did not last long enough to give us time to think about it. In less than a minute, the storm was upon us. In less than 2, the sky was entirely overcast, and what with this and the driving spray, it became suddenly so dark that we could not see each other in the smack. Such a hurricane as then blew, it is folly to attempt describing. The oldest seaman in Norway never experienced anything like it. We had let our sails go by the run before it cleverly overtook us. But at the first puff, both our masts went by the board as if they had been sawn off, the mainmast taking with it my youngest brother, who had lashed himself to it for safety. Our boat was the lightest feather of a thing that ever sat upon the water. It had a complete flush deck, with only a small hatch near the bow, and this hatch it had always been our custom to batten down when about to cross the Ström, by way of precaution against the chopping seas. But for this circumstance we should have foundered at once, for we lay entirely buried for some moments. How my elder brother escaped destruction I cannot say, for I never had an opportunity of ascertaining. For my part, as soon as I had let the foresail run, I threw myself flat on deck, with my feet square against the narrow gunwale of the bow,
and with my hands grasping a ring-bolt near the foot of the foremost. It was mere instinct that prompted me to do this, which was undoubtedly the very best thing I could have done, for I was too much flurried to think. For some moments we were completely deluged, as I say, and all this time I held my breath and clung to the bolt. When I could stand it no longer, I raised myself upon my knees, still keeping hold with my hands, and thus got my head clear. Presently, our little boat gave herself a shake, just as a dog does in coming out of the water, and thus rid herself in some measure of the seas. I was now trying to get the better of the stupor that had come over me, and to collect my senses so as to see what was to be done, when I felt somebody grasp my arm. It was my elder brother, and my heart leapt for joy, for I had made sure that he was overboard. But the next moment all this joy was turned into horror, for he put his mouth close to my ear and screamed out the word, "Moskostrom!" No one will ever know what my feelings were at that moment. I shook from head to foot as if I had the most violent fit of the ague. I knew what he meant by that one word well enough. I knew what he wished to make me understand. With the wind that now drove us on, we were bound for the whirl of the Ström, and nothing could save us.